All right, welcome back, everyone. Today we are going deep, deep, deep into creation. You know, that whole how did it all begin thing.
Always a good one to ponder, right?
Definitely. And to get into it, you've sent over some fascinating stuff. Like, we've got that basic rundown of like core Christian beliefs about creation.
Okay, yeah.
And then Genesis chapters 1 and 2, of course. Can't skip those, right?
OG creation story.
Totally. Oh, and to bring things into, the 21st century, a YouTube sermon by Pastor Paul.
Interesting. I've heard his stuff before. He's a good speaker.
Yeah, very engaging. So our mission, should we choose to accept it, is to weave these sources together and see like what picture of creation emerges.
Sounds like a plan.
Awesome. So let's jump right in. The first source lays out the foundational belief. God created the universe and everything in it by his choice. Like it was his will.
Right. It wasn't some random cosmic accident, you know?
Exactly. And it wasn't just like chaos either.
Oh, yeah. That concept of order is super important. It's like the opposite of that view that the universe is just random, you know?
Totally. So everything has a purpose, a relationship within this bigger design.
Like a perfectly balanced ecosystem,
Right.
right? You've got the sun and the moon governing day and night, seasons, even time itself.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so we've got this idea of intentional design, which perfectly sets the stage for Genesis chapters 1 and 2. The story, the details, we go from formless void to light.
Separating the waters from the sky, forming land and sea, and then bam, plants and animals, it's all there.
All in 6 days.
6 days of creation, culminating in God's rest on the seventh, setting the stage for the Sabbath.
Which, as we'll see later, is like hugely significant. Okay, but before we get too far ahead of ourselves, let's bring in Pastor Paul. From his sermon, what stood out to you?
Well, his central argument, basically, is that when we look around, all this evidence of design points to a creator. Like, it's got to come from somewhere, right?
Right. He even quotes that psalm, the heavens declare the glory of God, the skies proclaim the work of his hands. Psalm 19.1, I think.
You got it. It's like creation itself is shouting out the existence of a creator.
I like that, creation shouting it out.
Yeah.
And he uses this really cool analogy to drive home this design argument. Imagine you're walking by a store window and you see like a beautiful dress on a mannequin.
You wouldn't assume it just magically appeared there.
No way. Someone designed and made that dress. So he's saying the same logic applies to the universe, its complexity, its wonder. It didn't just happen by chance.
Right. Someone, or rather, something had to create it.
Okay, that makes sense. But how does Pastor Paul address evolution? Because that's like the big question, right?
Yeah, that's where different interpretations and worldviews come in. Pastor Paul's critique of evolution is that it relies on millions of years and, well, chance to explain how life got so complex. He talks about something called irreducible complexity.
Irreducible complexity, what's that all about?
Basically, it means that certain biological systems are so intricate that if you take away even one part, the whole thing stops working, like a mousetrap.
Ah, okay. So it couldn't have evolved gradually, piece by piece.
That's his argument. And then, get this, he brings up the discovery of soft tissue in a T-Rex fossil, which, if you go by the standard scientific dating methods, throws a wrench in that whole millions of years timeline.
Wow, okay. I gotta admit, that's intriguing. Makes you wonder, doesn't
Definitely food for thought.
it?
And then he throws out this other huge question when he says even some evolutionists struggle with. Where did all the matter come from for the Big Bang? Like, what was there before the bang?
Yeah, that's a head scratcher. Science doesn't really have a clear answer for that, does it?
Not really. And this is where Paul says Genesis comes in. He focuses on this Hebrew word bara, which means creating from nothing.
So he's suggesting that the Bible offers an explanation where science falls short. Interesting.
Very. Now, this leads us to one of the biggest debates about creation.
Yeah.
How long were those creation days? Were they literal 24-hour periods? Or are they more like symbolic periods of time?
A lot of people have strong opinions on that one.
Definitely. Pastor Paul, he leans towards the literal 24-hour day interpretation. He says trying to reconcile the Bible with evolution leads to problems theologically.
Like what?
Well, for example, if death existed before sin, that messes up the traditional Christian understanding of Adam and Eve in the fall.
Ah, I see. So he's coming at it from a perspective of trying to keep the Bible internally consistent.
Exactly. And then you've got those little details in Genesis that seem to contradict, like common sense. like light existing on day one, but the sun, moon, and stars not showing up until day four.
Light before the sun? How's that possible?
Well, Pastor Paul explains that God, being God, isn't bound by our laws of physics. He can create light without needing a sun. He uses the example of the plagues in Egypt, where there was darkness over the whole land except for Goshen, where the Israelites lived. It was like a localized darkness.
Wow, yeah, that's wild, like a divine spotlight. Okay, so light before the sun, check. But then we get to another head-scratcher, the separation of waters on day two. Some above the expanse, which we call the sky, and some below. What's that all about?
Right. So some creation scientists have this idea called the vapor canopy theory. Basically, they envision this layer of water vapor surrounding the Earth, like a big protective bubble.
Okay, so like a global greenhouse.
Exactly. And this canopy, it would create a consistently warm climate all over the Earth, which some argue is why people lived so long back then, according to Genesis.
Fascinating. I mean, whether you buy into the vapor canopy idea or not, it's definitely a thought-provoking concept. And some even think this canopy was the source of the floodwaters in Noah's story.
Could be. Now hold on to your hats, because it gets even weirder. Genesis says plants were created with seed already in them. Not just seeds to be planted, like they were mature from the get-go.
Wait, what? So they just popped into existence fully grown?
Seems that way. Makes you think about time, you know? Like, what even is time from God's perspective? If he created it, maybe he's not bound by it the way we are.
Mind-blowing stuff. Okay, but now we got to talk about the main event. Humankind. What sets us apart, according to Genesis, is that we're made in God's image. This is huge, right?
Absolutely foundational to the Christian faith. And Pastor Paul really emphasizes what this means, practically speaking.
So it's not just a nice theological idea. It has real-world implications.
For sure. First, it establishes our difference from animals. We have these unique capacities for thought, creativity, relationships. Things animals don't have.
It's like those qualities that reflect the divine. Love, compassion, reason, the ability to create.
Exactly. And Pastor Paul says it also sets us apart from angels. Because even though angels are created beings, they're not made in God's image the same way we are.
So it's a uniquely human thing. Which leads to the third implication, the sanctity of life. Because we bear the image of God, every human life is inherently valuable and deserves respect. Powerful stuff.
Okay, but there's this one detail in Genesis that always trips me up. That use of plural pronouns. Let us make man in our image. That's who's us here? It's like, who's God talking to?
Right. Pastor Paul sees this as a clear pointer to the Trinity. God the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit working together in creation.
So we're seeing hints of the Trinity way back in Genesis.
Yep. And it shows that even before creation, God existed in this perfect community of love within himself. He wasn't alone.
Wow, that's amazing to think about. Okay, so we're made in God's image, but we're also given dominion over creation, which can be a bit tricky, right? Because some people see that as a license to exploit nature, to do whatever we want.
Yeah, but that's not what dominion is about. Pastor Paul says it's more like stewardship, like responsibility and caretaking. We're supposed to be caretakers of creation, not tyrants over it.
Like a gardener tending a garden. Exactly. A good gardener cultivates the soil, plants seeds, waters, weeds, and nurtures those plants to produce good fruit. It's a partnership, a relationship based on respect and care.
I love that analogy. It really reframes how we think about our place in the world. Okay, so we've covered a lot here, from the foundational beliefs to the nuances of Genesis and some of the big questions that arise. But before we move on, I want to leave you with something to ponder. If God intentionally designed the universe with such detail and purpose, where do you fit into that grand design? What's your unique role in this vast cosmic story?
That's the question, isn't it? We'll dig into some more of those implications in the next part.
Sounds good. We'll be back soon for part two of our deep dive into creation. Stay tuned.
So, you know, we left off talking about how being made in God's image has real-world implications. It's not just some abstract theological concept.
Absolutely. It shapes our understanding of pretty much everything. Ourselves, our relationships, how we treat each other, how we interact with the world around us.
It's like that foundational truth that everything else flows from. Exactly. Pastor Paul really emphasizes this in his sermon. He says that this image of God thing isn't about physical resemblance. Like, we don't literally look like God.
Right, because God is spirit, not like flesh and blood.
Exactly. It's about reflecting God's character, his qualities.
Love, creativity, wisdom, justice, mercy, that deep capacity for relationship.
All those things. And here's the thing. If we really truly get what it means to be image bearers of God, It changes everything. It raises the bar for how we live our lives.
It's like we're walking around with these little sparks of divinity within us, little pieces of God's DNA that give us this incredible potential.
That's a great way to put it. And it means we're called to something higher.
Yeah.
You know, we're not just animals. We're not just biological machines. We're something more.
We have a purpose, a meaning that goes beyond just survival and self-gratification.
Right. And it also impacts how we see each other. Every person, regardless of their background, their beliefs, their circumstances, carries inherent worth because they reflect the image of the Creator.
It's a powerful argument against any ideology that diminishes human dignity or reduces people to just statistics or objects.
Absolutely. And it even shapes our understanding of creativity. We're not just passive consumers of culture. We're co-creators with God. We have this innate drive to create, to bring beauty and order to the world.
Music, art, literature, scientific discoveries, all these amazing things humans have accomplished.
It's all a reflection, in its own way, of the divine image within us.
So it's not just about appreciating beauty. It's about recognizing our own capacity to create beauty and bring order to the world. And Pastor Paul really emphasizes that relational aspect of being made in God's image, too.
Oh, yeah, that's huge. We're created for connection, for relationship with God and with each other. And it's beautifully illustrated in the creation of Eve. God sees that Adam is alone and says, it's not good for man to be alone.
It's like that foundational need for connection is built into our very being. We're not meant to go through life alone.
Exactly. And, you know, that brings us back to this whole idea of dominion. If we're made in the image of a relational God, a God who is love, it shapes how we exercise that dominion over creation.
It can't be about domination or exploitation. It has to be about care, responsibility, stewardship, not just for humanity, but for all of creation.
Like a gardener, right?
Yeah, exactly. A good gardener tends to the soil, plants seeds, waters weeds, and nurtures those plants to bring forth fruit. It's a relationship of mutual respect and care.
And it's a beautiful picture of what our relationship with the natural world should be like. We're not just consumers. We're participants in this ongoing story of creation.
We're partners with God in caring for this incredible planet we call home. And I think that same principle applies to how we treat each other, too. Dominion, exercised rightly, isn't about power or control. It's about using our gifts and resources to serve others, to lift each other up, to work towards a world where everyone can flourish.
It's about justice. It's about compassion. It's about recognizing the inherent dignity of every human being. Now, I want to circle back to something we touched on earlier. Pastor Paul's take on those seemingly paradoxical details in Genesis.
Oh, yeah, like light before the sun.
Right. It seems to defy the laws of physics as we understand them.
And that's precisely his point, isn't it?
Exactly. He's saying that God, being God, isn't bound by the limitations of time and space as we experience them. He can create light without a sun, bring forth dry land from water, speak life into existence from nothing.
It's a reminder that there's a realm of reality beyond what we can see and measure with our scientific instruments.
It's that realm of faith, of trusting in a power and a wisdom that's greater than our own. And Pastor Paul encourages us to embrace that mystery. To be okay with not having all the answers.
Which can be hard, you know, in a culture that's so obsessed with certainty and proof. It's about being comfortable with a certain level of ambiguity and wonder.
Totally. And that leads us into that whole debate about the length of the creation days. You know, literal 24-hour periods versus symbolic periods of time. Pastor Paul himself leans toward the literal 6-day creation interpretation.
But he doesn't, like, shut down other viewpoints, does he?
No, not at all. He actually emphasizes the importance of approaching these kinds of debates with humility and respect. He says what matters most is that we hold fast to the core belief that God is the creator and that the universe and all life within it are the result of his intentional design.
So it's more about focusing on the big picture, the awe-inspiring truth that we're part of something much grander than ourselves, a story orchestrated by a loving and powerful God.
Exactly. Now let's talk about that vapor canopy theory for a minute. It's a fascinating concept, but it definitely requires a bit of a leap of faith, even for those who take a literal interpretation of Genesis.
Yeah, it's not something you can easily prove or disprove scientifically, but for those who are open to the possibility of supernatural intervention, it offers a pretty compelling explanation for some of the things we read in the Bible.
Like the long lifespans of the patriarchs, for example, or the idea that the earth was once a much different place than it is now. More like a paradise, protected from the harsh realities of our current climate.
It's a pretty dramatic picture. People living for hundreds of years, a world teeming with life, a lush Edenic garden. And then, of course, there's that idea that this canopy was what caused the flood in Noah's story.
Right, like God just opened up the heavens and let loose this massive torrent of water. Whether one buys into the vapor canopy idea or not, it definitely sparks the imagination.
It gets us thinking about the possibilities, about the power of God's creative imagination, and how the world we see today might be just a shadow of what it once was.
And it reminds us that God is capable of doing far more than we can imagine. So we've talked about the wonder and beauty of God's creation. We've talked about the privilege and responsibility of dominion, of being stewards of this incredible planet. We've talked about the inherent value of every human being as an image bearer of God. And we've explored those paradoxical details in Genesis that challenge our understanding of time and space.
It's been quite a journey so far.
It has. But, you know, we can't talk about creation without addressing the elephant in the room, can we?
The fall.
The fall. That moment when sin enters the world and fractures the harmony of God's perfect design. It's a difficult topic, but it's essential to understanding the human condition.
And ultimately, it's what sets the stage for the good news of the gospel, of God's plan of redemption.
Exactly. And that's what we're going to explore in part three.
We'll be right back after the break. All right, so we're back and we're ready to tackle the big one, the fall.
Yeah, this is where things get real. Like, we've been talking about the beauty and wonder of creation, the goodness of God's design, but we can't ignore the reality of sin and brokenness in the world.
Right, because if God created everything very good, as Genesis says, then where did things go wrong?
That's the million-dollar question. And it's one that's puzzled theologians and philosophers for centuries. But, you know, Pastor Paul offers some really insightful thoughts on this. He starts by reminding us that even though God created everything perfect, he also gave humans free will, the ability to choose.
And that's where things get tricky, right? Because with free will comes the possibility of choosing wrongly, of choosing to disobey God.
Exactly. And that's precisely what happens in the Garden of Eden. Adam and Eve, tempted by the serpent, choose to eat the forbidden fruit. They choose to put their own desires above God's will.
It's like that classic story of rebellion, of wanting to be our own gods, of thinking we know better than the one who created us.
Yeah, it's a story that's played out countless times throughout human history. And Pastor Paul says this act of disobedience, this fall, has had catastrophic consequences. It brought sin and death into the world. It fractured our relationship with God, with each other, and even with creation itself.
It's like this ripple effect that spread outward, contaminating everything. And we still feel the effects of that fall today, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. We see it in the brokenness of our relationships, the violence and injustice in the world, the sickness and suffering we experience, the environmental degradation. It's all a reminder that things are not the way they're supposed to be.
It's like this deep ache in the human heart, this longing for something more, something better.
A longing to be restored, to be made whole again. And, you know, that's where the good news of the gospel comes in. Because even though we mess things up royally, even though we rebelled against God, he didn't abandon us.
He didn't just leave us to wallow in our mess.
Not at all. Instead, he initiated a rescue mission. He set in motion a plan to redeem us, to bring us back into right relationship with himself.
And that plan ultimately finds its fulfillment in the person of Jesus Christ, right?
Exactly. Jesus, God in human flesh, came to bridge the gap that sin had created. He lived a perfect life, died a sacrificial death on the cross, and rose again, conquering sin and death once and for all.
It's like this cosmic do-over, a second chance for humanity.
It's an offer of forgiveness, of new life, of hope for a future where creation is restored to its original goodness.
Wow, that's powerful. So, you know, we've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive. We've explored the wonders of God's creation, wrestled with some of the tough questions about faith and science, and grappled with the reality of sin and redemption.
And I think what we see is that the story of creation isn't just about how the world began. It's about who we are, why we're here, and where we're going.
It's a story that invites us to see ourselves as part of something much bigger than ourselves, a grand narrative that unfolds from Genesis to Revelation.
It's a story that offers hope, purpose, and meaning.
So we want to encourage you to keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep seeking your place in this amazing cosmic story.
And may you find wonder in the beauty of God's design, hope in the promise of redemption, and a renewed sense of purpose in the truth that you too bear the image of the Creator.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into creation. Until next time, keep seeking.